Welcome back to Cash Grab Cinema. My name is Rachel. This is Josh.
Hey, everybody.
And in the same room, because the CDC says that's fine, don't you fucking walk that shit back, is Trey.
Hey.
Woo! I mean, we're back, baby.
I'm so happy to be here with all of it. Can we sing something in unison because it's going to match up?
Yes, we can.
In the spirit of the film that we just watched, I would like to make this out to Sherry Lewis. And you'll get it. Mm-hmm. This is the song that never ends. It just goes on and on, my friends. Some people started singing it, not knowing what it was.
Hey, hey.
And then continue singing it forever just because. That felt good. Thank y'all. I appreciate that.
All at once. We could have held hands if we wanted to, but ew, gross. We have watched, this is the last thing I did before lockdown. I went to a film festival, and I saw the premiere of Black Lake, the feature film. She kept saying it like that, so I assume that's how we're supposed to say it.
Okay. Black Lake, the legitimate feature film.
Well, if you Google Black Lake, you actually get like an old school creature from the Black Lagoon movie.
And there's something, there's a TV show that came out in like 2014. And then there was another different movie.
But if you Google Black Lake, the feature film, you will find what we have watched.
Black Lake 2020. Black Lake 2020.
The feature film.
The feature film.
Yes. Good branding.
That's what the Instagram is. Black Lake, the feature film. I watched this movie, came back, and immediately told you all about it. I even have a tiny poster.
I have rarely seen Rachel get so excited about a film. It was like, she had to spread the word of Black Lake.
Yes.
She was like, you won't believe this movie. It's unbelievable.
I've been, proselytizing all over the place.
Yeah.
I just want to spread the word, the good word, of Black Lake, the feature film.
She's handing out flyers on the street corner.
They are poorly Xeroxed, but people get the message.
She rented out some space in a strip mall and has weekly services.
Sadly, the strip mall is actually closed, and nobody told me that before I signed the lease, so that was embarrassing.
Like, there's no power. There's no water. Yeah, it's really...
So it's just me acting you're squatting.
But then you convert the service into a Twitch stream for the masses during COVID. You've really adapted and kept the message strong.
Yes.
Much appreciated.
Normally, I am all for illegitimate ways of watching a film because capitalism is garbage and not real and money is fake. But as a lover of Black Lake, the feature film, I am going to really put it on our audience. You better watch this film legitimately.
Yes.
Yes.
Amazon.
Support this this film with money.
It's on Amazon Prime, UK version, but VPN will get you there if need be. Watch the legitimate film. Watch it now. Don't even listen to this podcast. Yeah. Skip this episode. Go watch Black Lake, the feature film.
Seriously, I feel anyone who's listening to us, you need to go watch the film first and then come back and listen to this because it has to be seen to be believed.
Yes.
To be understood, to be...
I've been talking about this movie for a year and a half, and I kept saying, there's no way I'm overhyping it. As Josh was like, Rachel...
Come on now, honestly.
You're ruining it.
You're going to build it up too much.
There's no way Black Lake, the feature film, is as good as you're saying it is.
Oh my gosh, you both do such a good Josh impression.
Thank you. I just, like, pretend I haven't had water in 4 or 5 days. It really gets me there, you know?
My veins are screaming.
So was I right? What did I overhype it? Or did nothing I say prepare you for what you have just witnessed?
That second part. Truly.
I want to say off the top, cash grab or not a cash grab, because I know for a fact that the director of this film reads a lot of the reviews. So I want to make sure that they know off the top how we feel. And if you say the opposite of what I'm going to say, I'm also going to follow it up with, do you want to step outside?
I think I know what you're going to say.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Go on.
Is it a cash grab? Of course not.
No.
This is an artistic heart song.
This is the furthest away from a cash grab that of anything that we watched, including Kudzu Zombies.
Yes.
Or no, Southern Fried Zombies.
Attack of the Southern Fried Zombies, the feature film.
Listen, I can only tolerate so much of this.
Or Texas Voodoo Zombies. Like, I think I describe it as a singular artistic vision.
Yes.
Yes.
True. Well, because it is the director, the writer, the producer, the editor. Also, she stars in it.
Yes. On that point, I got such positive Neil Breen vibes from this film. The idea of there's this auteur with a vision. And before anybody, I'm not saying that this is necessarily like a bad movie.
Right.
Because I think a lot of people think Neil Breen, like, oh, bad movies. No. It transcends all that. It's complete abstract, you know,
so
at
you
times
mean like
nonsensical.
The abstract part of Neil Breen.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
The
like,
part of Neil Breen where you're just like, what the heck is he thinking?
The David Lynch sort of part of Neil Breen.
Speaking of David Lynch.
Uh huh.
You missed it because you went to go get snackies.
Uh huh.
But at the end, she has a special thanks.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah.
It kept going? It ended like 9 times.
Just like the last Lord of the Rings movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One parallel between this and Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, so she thanked David Lynch and Lady Gaga.
Hey. Okay. See? It's all coming together now. Yeah, this film makes total sense. All
right. So I was saying, I want to hear what you guys think the plot is, because I know what it is. Because I went to the premiere,
mm-hmm.
the director was there, and she did a Q&A and had a speech at the end. So I know what it's about because she told me directly. I didn't until she told me directly, but I would like to know what you guys think this movie is about.
I would like Josh to go first, please.
Okay, I'm going to give it a shot, okay? Because I think maybe I know.
All right.
I'm sure that I don't know, but this is what
Josh,
my interpretation is.
I just want to be clear. The fact you don't know what Black Lake the feature film is about. But go ahead. Tell me what you think it's about.
Okay. There is... our main character is a young woman who goes to... on this retreat in Scotland at this really nice house... And her aunt sends her a red scarf. And this red scarf, it turns out, through a series of very subjective montages and dreams, that this scarf is haunted. And it's haunted with the spirit of murdered girls in Pakistan. And when she tries to confront the scarf, she's attacked by a hair monster in a Scottish moor, and then she becomes the hair monster in the mud in the Scottish moor.
No, Trey.
I mean, Trey, was that, I mean, yeah. How
well,
close?
Those are things that happen.
Those are events that happen, but is that what the movie is about?
But what did they mean?
Okay, so here's my takeaway. Mm-hmm. And I know that I'm way off base, so I'm really enjoying
it. I just want to be clear. You are not going to get it.
I'm enjoying how wrong I am. So I think that this movie is about the Pakistani diaspora and how people who are from that country that live in other places, possibly in Western places or Western countries, are so disconnected from what's going on in the other country.
You're going too deep.
And they just don't know what's going on in the motherland, and something horrific and billowy has to come and cement that experience for those who are living outside the country.
No.
All right.
Maybe the billowy thing comes to snap them out of their Western ways, like, you know, eating Lucky Charms cereal. Right? If that's not a metaphor for capitalism.
All right, you ready?
Sure.
I don't know if I am.
So the main character.
Yes.
What was her name?
Aria.
Aria?
Okay. Yeah,
I think it's Aria.
She leaves the city to pursue her passion in the arts. So she goes to this cabin, fancy cabin, to get some peace and quiet. She gets sent a scarf from her aunt who had recently visited Pakistan.
Oh, right.
Yes. The scarf is, you see the little girl running with the chicken in the beginning. That's her scarf. It never explicitly says, but, or shows you, but she's, the little girl is murdered. And then an alligator eats her body.
Oh.
But men murdered her.
With a hammer?
Possibly.
Okay.
And yeah. possibly okay. assaulted her.
Okay.
Took the scarf, sold the scarf to the aunt who sent the scarf to the main character. Now the main character has the scarf. The scarf is haunted. You got that.
Yeah.
Points for that.
Yep.
The scarf is haunted by a Southeast Asia, a real legend that they have, a witch. Her name is Chura? Shira? I'm not exactly sure how.
Cheryl?
Yeah. Sherrell?
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 I'm probably butchering that. I'm sorry if I am.
I mean, we're in the South, Shug. That's Cheryl.
But it's a it's a demonic, malevolent South Asia witch who will possess the dead women. Like they, so what would have made more sense to me after reading more in the legends, again, though, I'm just reading like a snippet I've read here.
Mm-hmm.
The director of this movie is actually Pakistani. She knows better than I do. But anyways, they possess the girls and they're demonic, and normally they will attack the men that have wronged them. So I don't understand why this demonic spirit kills the aunt and then, and tell me if I'm wrong in my interpretation, sexually assaults the main character with her demon hair twice.
Yeah.
And tortures her for, like, what seems weeks on end.
Like days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there were a couple of shirts, so she was there for a while.
Yeah. So, that is the plot of the movie. Who is surprised?
Is the ghost homophobic and he's, or the ghost, or the witch is reading the main character as masculine because they are, like, a masculine presenting person?
Ooh.
Maybe. She didn't say anything about that, but that doesn't mean that's not a part of the storyline. Maybe that's something
but that doesn't
she was hoping
aunt.
You were... Exactly. So. It still doesn't explain the
well,
aunt.
Fuck me.
Because the aunt bought the scarf from a vendor, and the we could say that the maybe the vendor knew
yeah.
that it had these disturbing provenances. But
right.
how would the aunt know that? How especially... would our main character know that as the scarf was a gift from the aunt who bought it?
Right.
It's a little confusing.
The aunt's telepathic, right? Because she managed to make sure that the gift got there a day after she arrived to her Airbnb.
I mean, that's she's just very, very well
yeah.
planned.
She does logistics for CNE Global.
Just great with spreadsheets.
Yeah.
It's a real loss.
She knows all about shipping times.
She has an Excel spreadsheet when she buys gifts, so.
Right.
That is a type, and those out there, we love you. We appreciate you.
You keep the world rolling.
Yeah, so this movie is a feature. Mm-hmm. Boy, is it a feature.
It's a legitimate feature film.
So that was the question I asked during after the Q&A, or that was the first person to ask a question at the Q&A was, and I think I said it very gently, was
okay.
what made you decide to go with a feature instead of a short film, since those are so, since they're becoming more and more accepted by a mainstream audience? And her response was something along the lines of, it was just too big of a story to fit in a short.
And, yes.
And now that yes. you've seen it, do you agree with that statement?
I mean, I feel as though I must.
There's so many shots.
The shots go on.
They do go on.
They linger.
And, like, it's like shooting fish in a barrel, right? Like, of course it looks good.
Yes.
Because you got the quality camera.
Yeah.
You've got the premium landscape. Of course it looks good. Like the
yeah, some of the shots in this film are absolutely
of course.
Breathtaking. Yeah. They look fantastic.
Is she also the cinematographer?
Yes.
Yes.
So she's also, in addition to those things, she's got an eye for what is a well-composed shot.
Yeah, like I don't want that to be mistaken or buried in the podcast at all. It's like there's real talent in this. Mm-hmm. Somebody has artistic vision. I'm going to say it's her because she has fingers in all the pies. She's got artistic vision. But the thing is when you do all the jobs, especially all the above the line jobs, there's no one there to tell you this scene is lingering. Right. Or you've lost me. Like, we need to redo this section. Or maybe we should rewrite the ending. Like, there's nobody there to be like, no, not
being,
this.
Yeah, being your own editor is a perilous task.
Because, it's hard.
Yeah.
Because you made all of those things. Why do you want to abandon any of them?
You made all those decisions. You shot all those shots. You set them up. Yep. So they are precious to you in a way that an outside editor would be like, well, this doesn't help the story. So,
right. And like, I feel like Josh could say more on that as an editor, but I feel like there's a lot of stuff that's just abandoned in the editing process. Like, yeah, that looks good. It'll be special features on the DVD.
Yeah. Yeah. They call it, I mean, you got to kill your babies. You know what I mean? That's what it is. It's like you're really attached to all this stuff because you've spent so much time planning it and going out and shooting it.
But there might be, howdy.
Yeah. There might be something from an entire day that doesn't wind up getting used. And you think to yourself, like, fuck, that whole day, it's just for nothing.
You wouldn't believe how accurate you are because this movie was made twice.
The movie's so nice, they made it twice.
What does that mean?
Well, I'll tell you what it means.
Okay.
She told us, so she had a little speech prepared because it was the debut of her feature film.
World premiere. Yeah, international. World premiere. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, because she lives in the UK.
Right.
Ah.
Or she did at the time. Anyways, so she tells us that they made the movie once. The people she made it with did not share her vision.
Okay.
So she made it again.
Huh.
I had a lot of questions.
I currently do as well.
But they felt rude. Because sure. Maybe it just wasn't the place.
Perhaps it was not the time.
Wasn't the time.
Yeah.
Right.
So.
And good on you for recognizing that.
Thank you.
So how much did she go into detail about that? Did she fully go, how far through the production was she the first time around before scratching it and starting over?
It was my understanding the way she said it, and again, I could be completely wrong, is that it was done.
It was finished and edited.
It was shot.
Oh, right.
Completely shot.
So it was in the can.
Yeah, in the can. I don't know if it was edited. I don't remember her saying anything about it being like a fully fleshed out, finished film, but it was the way she said it made me believe that it was finished being shot, and then she scrapped it, recast everybody, got like, she murdered that baby.
She took that baby out back, old Yeller style.
She drowned it with the hair.
Let me, Ma. It's my film.
Yes. Like some sort of animal with a brood, with a sick child. But you have to, like, kill that sick child to make room for the other ones. And
like the Cronenberg film? The Brood?
I haven't seen that.
I've not seen that either. I just know of its existence. I've heard of The Brood, everybody.
But I will say, this is not a movie we can really do shot for shot. Mostly because a lot of the shots are, like, nature. She mm-hmm. really enjoys the mountains, the animals in Scotland, that alligator she saw.
Again, strong Neil Breen vibes. Yeah. And same thing, like shots of nature that run along and have
a honestly, very long... she's got the skill in cinematography. She's missing an opportunity to make documentaries, like animal documentaries. She did win an award at the Film Fest.
What was
Best cinematography.
Yeah, see?
Deserved.
Yeah, yeah. It was beautiful.
And if I think about what is going to stick with me after watching this, it's going to be individual shots.
The way she ate the cereal? Because that's something I never forgot.
So are we talking about that? Because I want to talk about that.
I want to talk about the cereal. I bring it up every time I tell somebody about this movie. It is the first part in the movie where any lines are said, and like, how are we, like, 10 minutes in? 15?
Yeah, it's about a 10 or 15. It takes a long time for her to get from... Mm-hmm. Well, at first there's a sort of... It's supposed to be a juxtaposition montage between...
Her driving to the place.
And the little girl in Pakistan.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So it's cutting back in between that. And that part made sense a little bit, or it was like intriguing enough and it didn't have to make sense, so it was kind of like I was following
along.
Yeah,
it was fine.
But then she gets there, and yeah, it takes her a good like 8 minutes to get
out. Well, she's
got to
show us every room of the Airbnb. It felt like contractual. Yeah. Like the people were like, yeah, you can use our house, but you better not skip a single room. People want to see our antique mirror.
You show off every angle, every statue, every nook, every cranny, every figurine. You will show it and people will see it.
Yeah. Even this figurine I found in the dumpster. You will show it off.
And it worked because now I want to go.
Yeah.
Well, I have to go to this place. It looks absolutely
beautiful. You have to have at least
beautiful.
6 shots from the window seat thing that's in the corner.
Look, I haven't traveled internationally since I was a child. Let's go and remake parts of Black Link.
Oh my God.
Yes. Bad film. Let's do it. I think I have a red scarf.
We'll do it all homegrown so we won't appropriate anyone else's culture.
That's right, because that's fine that she did. She's Pakistani. Yeah. We can do Southern stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll go with like a Southern Wiccan person or something. Yeah.
And our red scarf would be a gingham.
Exactly. Exactly.
It'll be a, oh my gosh.
No, it's got to be well, if we were in the Pacific Northwest, it would be flannel.
But here it will be a what used to be the checkered coverings for the Po folks tables.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm seeing it now. Wow. Okay, cutting off this discussion, we'll save that for off mic. Yeah. We need to get back to these
So she gets inside. She's got the Fruit Loops. She sits down.
They're Lucky Charms.
Thank you.
Wow.
She's got the Lucky Charms. She sits down with So she took the milk out of the gallon jug and poured it into a fancy glass craft. Like, okay. Why? That's unnecessary. And the way she's like, she picks up the cereal. This is a White Claw. She picks up the cereal and goes, here we go.
Yeah. The first spoken lines of the movie.
It's just such an odd choice because we see her eat the cereal in a way that makes me think like, so she's had cereal before, right? Because I can't tell. But in the latter half of the cereal eating, she does have a good take of like,
yes,
I'm eating the cereal and like,
she got a leg up and she's like scratching her belly. Yes. Just like, just sort of enjoying being alone.
Yes, like that was clearly what the take was supposed to be.
Yeah.
But she didn't cut off the beginning. That didn't work.
Yeah. So many times I felt like she was giving us like 4 or 5 different takes of what she was supposed to do in that one particular shot.
Right.
But all of them got left in. You know, I think somewhere out there there's a renegade cut of just taking the best takes from each moment.
I feel like that renegade cut is Josh tonight later. Like, I'm gonna fucking get this shit.
And 8.5 minutes.
But it'll really be like 4 hours later, I'm gonna wake up in the morning. Josh is gonna have bloodshot eyes. He's gonna have eaten all the cheese in the house.
I'll be somehow like Charlie Day from It's Always Sunny when he was working in the mailroom, smoking cigarettes, got the strings all over the place. It all makes sense, Rachel.
But I actually only have a bag of shredded cheese left. He's eating that. And he's just like, sits me down, hits the space bar, and he's like, just watch it.
Oh.
He's asleep before the 8-minute credits roll.
So Rachel deletes it. We never talk of it again.
I do want to say this about everything that happens up until this cereal eating point. Because I'm going to be very vulnerable and personal right now, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So there are times when I go out into nature and I just look around and I just take in a deep breath and just be like, just so grateful to be alive.
Okay.
In the same way that this character does, but the way that I'm doing it, in the back of my mind, I'm like, I'm being very performative about it, as if it's B-roll for someone making the film of my life.
You are the main character.
Yeah. And so when she was eating the Lucky Charms and just really getting into it and enjoying it and just being in her space, I was like, I identify with this and I'm going to talk about it with the therapist that I will be getting later this month. So it's a form of representation and I felt seen.
Do you need a cut of this movie for your therapist?
Yes. Anything to get the word out.
No, just anything so they can to know
switch. Anything to switch therapists.
They'll watch this and be like, well, I never thought I would fire a client this fast, but here we are.
Hey, that's fine. I want them to make an informed choice.
This is part of my baggage now. This is how I am now.
This is who we are. And they're just like, Trey, I've asked you several times to stop talking about this. Then it's just you disassociating for the rest of the session.
While he's doing a dance number with a red scarf in the office. Oh my God.
So sometime after the Lucky Charms, we get, I think, a flashback to just the lots of fried foods being cooked.
Your guess is as good as mine. Like,
I can't tell if it's a flashback or if it's that same juxtaposition, like this is current day or no, for the little girl, Pakistan for the little girl. I think
Trey's right that it's a flashback, that they're trying to like set this up, that the scarf is from Pakistan, right?
So it brings her she's flooded with memories of this place.
Right. But my thing is, like, I wish they would have just shown the whole incident with the little girl, but you could have given it to us in parts.
Mm-hmm.
Like the little girl at the beginning of the day, having a normal day with her scarf, street food, normal day.
Right.
And then the seedy stuff happens. And then you don't have to show all the graphic details.
Right.
But, you know,
a couple of suggestive shots. Yeah. Just so that the audience knows, like, oh shit, something's
awful happening.
Something's terrible happening. Yeah.
Right. And then just show the scarf in the stall for sale after that.
Right.
And then you can see, like, oh, dang. She died and they didn't even care. Like, because that's what happened and that's why that's bad.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. When you think about it, it's kind of a... Well, now that I have the knowledge of what actually happened, yeah. it's actually a very affecting story.
The movie is different now that you know.
Yes, yes, it is.
Yeah. I asked Josh, do you want me to tell you before or after? And he's like, no. After. I want to be confused for an hour.
I stand by that. I think it was better. Yeah. I think it was better to be just baffled.
I just want to talk about the phone calls, not because they were helpful in any way, but because like that's what they sounded like.
There was a couple times where she cut back and forth between the aunt and her while they were talking, and it flowed very naturally,
yes.
And the timing was fine and all that stuff. But then there would be moments where she would be on the phone and you would hear
it
her
aunt.
It sounded
like the actor who played the aunt called an answering machine,
mm-hmm.
recorded it there, and then they just took that audio and slapped it in the movie. But it's not a good answering machine. I mean, like a tape answering machine.
They filtered it through airport announcement first.
So you're like, Auntie, what's the problem?
Now boarding.
Which is too bad, because the actor who plays, what's her name? Auntie Ayani?
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
is her name.
Yeah.
I liked her a lot.
Yeah.
She was quite good. She did and some later on in the film she did some fantastic like eye acting.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like the further the film went, the closer the shots became, and so there's less and less of their faces.
Yeah. I wonder if that was intentional.
Not just saying that yeah. feels. Is that supposed to like feel more claustrophobic?
Like they feel trapped by the scarf.
Yeah.
But like, do you know? Did you know that the demonic presence? I forgot the name already.
Cheryl.
Like, there was a separate actor in the movie playing that.
Separate from the girl from the beginning of the movie?
Yeah, because she's just a girl who's not been murdered yet. Like, she's not the Cheryl.
Ah, okay.
There is an actor playing the Cheryl. Did you even know that?
I assumed...
Because there's only one part where you see, like, the hand going.
Yeah.
And that's the only time.
Right. Oh, is that what is that the witch then?
Yeah.
It shows up at the door?
Yes. And they hug.
Right.
Also,
right,
because
she invites the witch in.
Yeah.
And she does.
And then like they and then the witch stays the night, and then you see her go in the scarf is floating, and then the witch is in the scarf, and then they kiss. And this part confused me the most. And again.
Uh-huh.
Maybe it's a cultural thing that I don't understand, but the way I was reading it is that is the spirit, like the demonic presence that has been like conjured because the girl was killed.
Mm-hmm.
She's like 9. The main actor kisses the witch who was conjured by the 9-year-old's death. Like, are you kissing the spirit of a minor right now? It's just very confusing.
But whoever was behind the veil, they were an adult actor. Yeah, they were adults. So
her picture is on Instagram. I would say that, like, it's quite 28, 30.
Okay.
It's quite confusing, though. Again, not to harp on Neil Breen, but in Fateful Findings and other movies, too, there's, like, this mysterious character that, like, wears a black suit, and you just see them walking, and sometimes they just walk to an area and then disappear. And it's not really ever explained so that it makes sense along with the story, and that's sort of how it felt a little bit.
Speaking of black suits, let's talk about Marvel Minute.
Marvel Minute.
So it's The Punisher. I'm not going to watch that fucking bootlicker film. Pass. Nazis have ruined it.
Well, that's that on that then. All right.
Anyways, Josh, do your outro music.
Marvel 20 seconds.
Well, I mean, if bootlickers didn't ruin it, I'd watch it. Like, stop ruining things. Stop.
Please.
It.
Please. Please stop it.
But next is Spider-Man 2.
Oh.
Ooh.
Oh, what an Oscar. What? And then Blade Trinity. I bought the DVD at a thrift shop. It better be good. Oh, man.
Hey, Alfred Molina is in Spider-Man 2, so that's fine.
All right, I'll take him.
Oh, is that Doc Ock in Spider-Man? Oh, sorry.
Wow, dude. This Marvel Minute is a spoiler-free zone. You can talk about The Punisher if you want, because that's what we're discussing. But
There's like 3 Spider-Man villains that are mainstream enough to show up in the movies, so it can't be that big of a surprise.
Wow.
Yeah, just dig a deeper hole for yourself.
Just reflect all the damage you've just done. I think they call that victim blaming. I'm a victim. Oh, God. It's a hate crime. Rachel, you can't call it a hate crime. Well, I hated it. That's right. I did both parts of the joke.
Swish.
Anyways, this is a can of water I opened. It's so fancy.
Can I say what it is? Or do we not want to promote it?
Liquid Death? Heck yeah. Liquid Death, do you want to sponsor us? And by sponsor, I mean, I'll just take cans of this water. Everybody, buy Liquid Death. Sold at Sheetz.
At a Sheetz near you, y'all.
And comes in normal and sparkling. I don't care for the sparkling one, but the normal one's real good. What, do sponsors not like honesty?
It's funny that you are drinking something called Liquid Death, because it seems as though in this movie, death lives in the water.
Oh, bringing it back. Way to go, Trey.
The director of this film really liked the movie The Ring.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
There was a genuinely haunting moment. For me, the scariest part of this movie, I think, was when there was like the head of the bad wig in the water.
When she thinks it's good.
Yeah.
Because that was after she kissed the spirit, and then the spirit ran out of the house.
And she followed it. Pantsless, no less.
Yeah, with a jacket and a shirt on.
Jacket and a shirt.
And boots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't be crass.
she immediately took off, all right, yeah.
We got to see the entirety of all of that. Take my boots off. Anyways, it's clear that maybe the character thought, like, oh, this is a good spirit. It's fun. It's jovial. And, like, I'm going to chase after it. And then
she invited it into the house.
Yeah. Like,
kind of put it to bed in its own room.
Yeah.
You know?
And then, I was obsessed with, like, is she checking on it? Like, what's going on? This is a spirit. Like, what is she doing? She just put it in the room.
Maybe she didn't know it was a spirit then.
Maybe.
Because it was, like, a solid person.
It was a solid person wearing clothing from the 1800s.
I still maintain that the witch and the spirit of the girl are 2 different entities in the movie.
Maybe. Right?
that's the only way that I can kind of like make it make sense to me. I don't think like the spirit of the girl has a corporeal form that can interact with her. I think it just kind of like makes her flash back to memories of her, the little girl's life.
Right.
But then the witch is like corrupting that to get to her.
Mm-hmm. Like as a punishment.
Right. Because the little girl is represented by like the red scarf, but right. then the witch is represented by long hair and like a black scarf.
Right. And the wigs.
And the wigs.
I will say the movie is like wide open for interpretation.
Sure.
And maybe that was intentional.
Yeah. Probably not. But I'm into it. I like speculating because I just saw an ink blot of a movie. And so it made me feel a lot of things.
It's all over the place.
It is.
I will say number two scariest moment for me was, or not scariest, but like great gross out stuff, is she was eating rice while watching Fantastic Planet. And all of a sudden like a piece of hair came out of her mouth. And then she goes to the bathroom and she like, it's like she's a clogged drain. She just like keeps on coming with all this hair out of her mouth.
Yeah, that was pretty visceral.
Yeah, it was gross and awesome.
It's one of those clown gags with the scarf.
But disgusting.
It's gross and terrifying and it kept going.
It's wig hair.
Yeah. I really think. Oh. I really.
That's commitment.
Yeah, it is.
Because she put the hair in her mouth.
Yeah.
She had
to have. Yeah, she did that.
She did all her own stunts.
I have to say, though, that if it would have been a short, and she was forced to make those choices of what to get rid of, I do think it would have been a better film. Honestly.
Yeah.
Because you get lost in so much dead space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is outside knowledge from the podcast, but you said that the director mentioned that the parts where things were silent and we were just watching her doing things were intentional.
Yeah.
I've been trying to kind of understand that particular choice, and I get parts of it in the beginning because
she's seeking that silence. Yes, the character,
that's right. That's exactly what she wants. She's out there, there's not a soul around.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I don't know who shoots her at the end, but presumably there's not another person around. It's silent, she's enjoying that, it's helping her to reconnect with her art, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's like all these long shots of like coffee swirls and
painting.
And painting, and then like there's some slugs and some caterpillars in there sometimes.
Horses. Or no, cows.
Cows. Yes.
And sheep.
It's like a very much like life and decay sort of thing happening, which may connect to the witch folklore, I don't know.
Me neither.
Okay.
And I'm not saying like you have to make a movie for a Western audience, obviously not. But it seemed like she was making a movie for a Western audience, seeing as it premiered in Atlanta. It was in English, no subtitles, no...
Mm-hmm.
Like, it seemed like a Western movie. So I'm not saying you have to make a movie with a Western slant. But if you're going to make a movie for a Western audience about a culture that they might not know anything about, there needs to be a level of hand-holding.
Yeah. Mm. Or just kind of explain what the witch's motivation is so that we kind of understand what it wants, or like what it, just some sort of something to hang on to.
Yeah.
Because what you were saying before about the not being made for Western audiences, when the main character and her aunt were talking, like every once in a while they would slip into another language and there were no subtitles.
Right.
Just, you know, we had to follow along.
Yeah. I mean, even Edward Cullen, you know, He googled Vampire Baby, you know what I mean? get some info. It could be as simple as, you know, she does like a search or something and sees, you know, that classic thing from horror thrillers where...
Oh yeah, because she does the Google search about like missing girls in that particular city in Pakistan.
Right.
And she kept coming up with all these sorts of them. Yeah.
And they didn't show much, but yeah, according to the conversation she has with her aunt, she's saw so many articles. It was a lot of articles about the same thing that happened. So just do something. Do something to explain, because yeah, I had no idea about the witch.
Right? That was a surprise to you, wasn't it?
It was.
It was. I think it was a surprise to everyone there, like, oh...
And I think my original interpretation of the movie is not completely off.
No, you both had, like, parts correct.
Apart from not knowing specifically about the witch.
Follow me here, okay? So, all these weird things
we're
are happening.
We're going on a journey.
Okay. All right. This, the main character probably lives in the UK somewhere, I'm guessing, just based on her accent.
I think she's from Cardiff.
Cardiff? Okay.
I could be wrong.
And her, sorry, auntie, visits Pakistan but does not live there.
Right.
Right.
Because they do say, like, you were taken advantage of because you're not from there in the cost of the scarf.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that means that they are both right for being taken advantage of by this cultural spirit, which if anyone who, like, lived there in Pakistan would probably see the signs and know what's going on and, like, have some kind of inkling.
Well, I did read online that if witch is suspected, there's a way you can bury the woman who was wronged by the man in such a ritualistic way as to appease the witch. Mm-hmm. So maybe they don't know that.
But the main character is so disconnected from this particular part of her culture that she invites the thing into the house with her.
Right. Right. Sort of unwittingly.
Yeah.
Instead of maybe doing that ceremonial burial on the scarf.
Yes.
Because that's the only thing she has access
and
to.
And her auntie told her to be like,
burn it.
Burn it. She said it in a dream and also in real life when she didn't remember it. And also said, oh, go ahead, burn it. It's fine.
And then the main character is like, I think I know what to do. I'm going to swirl this scarf around in the water while wearing blue jeans.
And it has its own special chair, which I don't know why, but I really love that as a choice. Because it's a chair that's adjacent to her bed, so it just sort of... It's draped there.
It wafts in the breeze.
Yeah.
It's there with her, but not on her. So.
It's sleep ambiance. It's like a salt lamp or like one of them diffusers with some lavender oil in it. But it's evil.
You never know when a music video from the 1980s is going to break out.
Wait a minute. Is my sound machine going to turn on me? Because I need that bitch.
Rest in peace to Tony Katane. What was your favorite too long scene or digression where it just kind of like lingered?
Well, I have a cheating answer because I saw in theaters. Maybe you guys should go first.
Oh, okay, Josh.
It would probably have something to do during one of the shots of her painting and like smearing the paint on her face.
Oh, the last one.
Yes.
The last paint scene.
The last painting.
When she was like losing her mind.
Yeah.
Okay, so mine is after she wakes up from the dream and or also real thing of her aunt washing blood off her hands and everything's blue and she's in the bathroom mirror and all you see is really her neck and it's all got that blue gel on it and it just goes on for so long. I'm like, that was a very nice neck.
That neck was front and center.
Yeah.
It made me, you know, all the long shots just kind of made me meditate on what's there and why I'm being shown this. And I was like, there's some other extra details in here that I just did not miss.
Just like, that jawline.
Yeah.
Mine would be, I have two. One's a joke, but hilarious, and the other is legitimate. Okay, so when she, I saw this in theaters, but it's like old school one room theater, so you could not, I mean, people did, but you could not leave without it being noticeable.
Was the exit in the front?
No, it was in the back.
Okay.
But people were going to notice. So there's a part where it goes black for a really long time. And you think, clearly this is the end. People started to clap.
Yeah. It was after what Josh was talking about, where she's covered in paint. It's like,
yep.
Yes.
And the hair's taken over. And it fades to black. And it's like, oh, okay.
All right. There it is.
Got it. And
people start to clap, and you might think, like, oh, well, it's a premiere. Sometimes there's extra clapping for good parts. They were getting up and leaving while clapping. Like, some people did not make it to the exit before the movie started back. They kept going.
That's rough.
Yeah, it was
rough. That's not.
It's the curse of being a true artiste, you know? Like, honestly, like, nope, not everybody's going to get it.
That's true. But my legitimate answer
including me, I guess.
My legitimate answer is when she's covered in the black paint, she has the wig on, and she's outside, and then there's a bunch of cows, and she's walking by them. And that sounds not good, but I really liked it because it was the surreal mixed with the mundane. Right. But I really enjoy that kind of imagery in movies.
Like, can I set up the shot?
Yeah.
Okay. So the camera's like at the base of a hill with maybe five or six cows just out there grazing. And the main character covered in black paint and with this like long black hair comes sort of, what's this direction?
She's coming like up from the right.
Yeah, she's coming diagonal. So she's not the focus of the scene, but she's sort of just there existing throughout all of this nature.
Yes.
Like her, this unnatural thing coming through. It's a very good shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think that all good movies or interesting movies always spell everything out for you.
Very right. True. People love that Vanilla Sky. What is it about? I don't know.
Well, beats me.
I was gonna mention that not long ago I watched the 1985 Belarusian film Come and See, which is this movie about a kid who joins the Russian army during World War II. And during the course of, like, I don't know, you lose all track of time in this movie, but he basically has this descent into madness, and he becomes, by the end of the film, he starts out as this fresh-faced kid, and then he's like this old man, and it's all grizzled. And that same thing, like the surreal with the mundane, so much of it just takes place in the forest, but it's like, it's crazy. And in this movie, there was moments like that, like what you were describing. I think you're right. I think it's like, it's pretty great if only it were sort of reined in a bit. You know?
Right.
If it were edited tighter and right. You know, certain things, you know, just didn't go on forever.
I agree. So, any guesses of why this movie isn't more popular?
I don't know. Is this her first feature film?
It might be the first feature. I'm not totally sure, but it is not her first film.
Right. And I think it's kind of stupid that fewer people appreciate short films than they do.
And I'm not saying mainstream popularity, but like art house, why isn't this more popular? Why aren't we seeing this in art houses?
I don't know. Or on Shudder or something like that.
Yeah, there is an answer. Anyone?
I mean, I can go for the obvious answer.
What's your obvious answer?
Because a woman, and woman of color...
Misogyny. You got there, Trey. You got there. It is misogyny. It is misogyny because, like, to be a director and be a woman is already hard enough. And people always like to point out, like, the women who are very popular and well-known about it. It's like, oh, well, that's just because nepotism. It's like, I don't hear you complaining about all the other nepotism when it has the correct gender aligned with it. But I will say, like, honestly, I think the only reason this isn't out in, like, art houses and shit and, like, people crapping all over themselves for it, because it has enough good stuff in it. You can overlook some of the stuff that you're just like, oh, that's kind of weird. It's because she is a woman.
Yeah.
And she is, like, a mass-presenting lesbian as well.
Yeah.
And she's Pakistani. Like, it's all the things. The intersectionality comes together. And at the peak, it's always going to be, well, you're just a girl.
Yeah. I feel as though people just don't want to form a cult of personality around this type of film like they could around Neil Breen or Tommy Wiseau. Even though, I will say, I did not enjoy this movie in the way that maybe the director intended for me to, but I also did not completely enjoy it ironically. Like, there were parts of it that I genuinely really got into, and I was like, oh, okay, there's some stuff happening here. I'm into this.
But as a man, you're allowed to be excellent even when you're failing.
Mm.
But you're not allowed to be even just middle of the road as a woman. Like, you have to be the best. You have to be perfect.
Yeah.
Or nobody wants to hear from you. And still nobody wants to hear from you, even if you're great at it. Like, just make the stuff and be quiet.
I definitely appreciate this film for how I'll take interesting and weird every single day. Like, it's so much better than boring. And I was not bored. Not once in this film. Even with the long-ass shots and everything like that, I wasn't. But the big difference is that in most, like, Neil Breen movies, there's nothing good. You know, there's nothing that's, like, done well. It's sort of...
Oh, yeah.
It's sort of a masterclass in everything you don't do.
Yeah.
But you don't get that with this. Like, there is so much that like, you see it and you're like, okay, all right, damn. Now we're going to have 25 minutes of, you know, eating cereal. But.
And it wasn't 25 minutes. It was like, yes, it was a long time eating cereal.
Yeah.
In the world of movies.
Yeah.
It went on for like a minute. And when, and if you really think about it, are you ever watching anybody eat on screen for over a minute? I don't think so.
No. Not without a very particular reason.
Yeah. Right. So. Like, maybe if we're talking about the gluttony scene in Seven.
Yeah. I was trying to think of, like, famous eating scenes. What's in my Rolodex?
But yeah, that did go on too long. And a lot of it just, like, it just needs someone else there to be like, all right, chop a minute off of that. Chop 20 seconds off of that.
Yeah.
Chop a minute off of that. And it just would have been a different film, still showcasing the talent she clearly has.
Right. And it's an interesting, original, unique idea. And
yes.
I think that's really cool. It should be applauded.
It
should be studied for years.
It just gets muddled a bit in, like, her vision is too strong that she knows what it is.
Yes.
Yes. And as very, she, very clearly.
Yes. Yeah. And as she watched it while she was editing, she was like, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All of this makes perfect sense. And I'm sure when people close to her watched it, they were probably in it for so long too that they were like, yeah, perfect.
Yeah.
She just needed some fresh eyes on that edit.
Mm-hmm. And honestly think. I bet any of our favorite movies, if they were only made by the writer and or the director, or if they did both, they would look something kind of close to this.
Right.
Well,
I mean, look at that hot garbage Zack Snyder made.
Oh, everybody's boy.
Like, everybody's high-fiving him all over the place.
I was going to say.
Like, let's get her on this. Justice League again.
This time in slow motion.
But at least the shots will be better.
You don't love Icelandic folk singing?
Well, famously, isn't that George Lucas's first cut of Star Wars was famously awful, right? And then, like, his wife and,
yep.
and mainly his wife, but other people around him.
I wish I could remember her name, but she
was famous. She got the Oscar.
Well, so she's memorialized, as she should be.
Mm-hmm. For editing that Star Wars film.
But I'm saying, we all need somebody around to say, like, oh, yeah, you know, to give us that compliment sandwich of, you know, like, oh, this works really well. Have you thought about just shaving that little bit off, you know?
Or someone who does not see your work as the precious labor that it is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And just is like, we want to make this so that other people can consume it and enjoy it. So some of this has to go.
Right.
For the spirit and integrity of what you're trying to say to maintain.
Agreed.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you need a committee to make a film, but it would have been good to have somebody tell her, like, all right, here's a list of stuff that doesn't work. Change it or don't, but this is my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. You don't need a committee. I think, even though it doesn't always land, it's almost better to get that sort of singular vision, because film can be that sort of, like, really individual thing.
I mean, what's that guy who made Bottle Rocket? You like him so good.
Wes Anderson.
You could see a Wes Anderson movie, you know it's a Wes Anderson movie.
Yep.
He ain't the only one making it, though.
Mm-mm.
No. No.
Tim Burton movies.
You know it's a Tim Burton movie. He ain't the only one making it.
Mm-mm.
Right.
His art director is responsible for a lot of the whimsical stuff that we enjoy. Well, I enjoy about
it. Yeah, the things that you watch it for, and then you're just like, God.
Yes, this is Halloween.
Yes, German Expressionism was dope.
Yeah, we sound so smart in this episode. Oh my God.
We're really killing it. Anyways, ad break. Mate, you know what? You don't even deserve Black Lake, the feature film.
Black Lake, the feature film. What I was thinking about.
Were you thinking about Black Lake, the feature film?
I was thinking about just how that room must have been. For like a big room with an audience. Watching this film all at the same time.
My mind went to, like, the room where they were working on the movie, or, like,
as
brainstorming the film.
I
mean, it's mostly just her. So it's that mirror that you saw at the beginning in her.
To be a fly on the wall while she made notes in a notebook.
Part of the film was us filming her artistic process.
Right.
Just going out and living.
Right.
What's that movie where you're just watching the director lose their mind?
Heart of Darkness.
Right.
Where's the Heart of Darkness of Black Lake the feature film?
That's gonna win some Oscars.
Well, we know what to do now.
The world needs it, and it's ready, I think.
What were you gonna say? What was it like in the theater?
Yeah, I mean, I was just thinking about how it must have been such a surreal experience to be in a room of, you know, people with, some of which had a very much a vested interest in the film.
Yes.
Some of which probably, you know, again, it's not...
Couldn't wait to get out to go eat the burgers next door.
Right, yeah. It's one of those films that's going to be sort of hit or miss. So I wonder how...
Well, and, like, I think you're more likely to have a hit at a fest because so many people there are in the industry.
Right, right.
So they get it.
Because this was a horror festival?
Women in Horror Film Festival, which has been renamed, but I don't know the new name. But I'm sure if you Google search Women in Horror Film Fest, you'll find it. Their trophy is called the Lizzie.
After Lizzie Borden?
Yes.
Hey, wow. That's kind of I like that.
It's a good trophy.
Yeah. Is it like a statuette of Lizzie Borden with the axe?
I can show you the picture of it. It's a severed hand holding an axe that's being hit into a can of film.
Oh
super
even
cool.
Better.
Yeah, it's good.
There's levels, y'all. So there was a scene where our protagonist goes into a greenhouse, which
an abandoned greenhouse.
Where only like I'd say 40% of the things are green. And that this is kind of our first time where she notices another presence.
Yes.
I would say.
Yeah.
And then she calls her auntie directly after that. But there was something about that. I was like, huh.
It's like a fraction of a jump scare happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, she just like, huh?
She just turns around like, what's that? There was nothing there. I don't even know if there was any foley or sound or anything like that. But she just like, she's just aware.
Right. It looked like, to me, that she had ADR'd her lines. And when she ADR'd her lines, she like whispered her lines like this. So the volume of her voice didn't really match up with her setting because it seems like she would just be talking normally. And it kind of looks like she was talking normally, but it sounded really soft.
Well, what the question is, was it still a functional greenhouse? Because if it was still a functional greenhouse, they are quite loud.
It did not look functional. It looked like nothing was on in that greenhouse. Mm. And it looked like the things that were green were slowly taking it over. You know,
everything was
overgrown and
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's strange.
There's another scene where our protagonist is going back to the canvas. And she's got some red paint and she's spreading it over that canvas. And it's intercut with someone, presumably her, swishing that red scarf back and forth in the water. It was like, oh, art. Okay, I get it.
Yeah. I'm here for it.
Yeah. This connects to me. And then, this perhaps is not as complimentary, but I still loved it, is when she hears the witch spirit or whatever outside. She's inside the house with a glass of milk.
Mm-hmm. Oh my god, yes. How did we not talk about this? All right, yeah.
Listen, sugar glass is a viable option.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
But do you want to step in it? No.
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 No one does.
So, I mean... An ice cube works in a pinch when you don't have any gel glass.
And several, because the protagonist steps in the glass mess and like is injured on the foot. But later, she doesn't have that foot injury. Is that a tell that she's turning into the witch?
You're giving me a lot of credit.
She picked up her healing powers.
You know this is what it's I true. Do.
It is forever the film apologist, Trey and Josh. If you listen, filmmakers, if you're ever worried your movie isn't good enough, Trey and Josh are going to take you out for a drink. Like, listen, friend, no.
How could sugar glass become ice cubes? I'll tell you how. Magic. Who does magic? Witches.
It's transmutation. It's how you know that the witchcraft is working.
And then, you know, just in an environmental level, you know, ice melts gel glasses forever. Congratulations.
Yes.
Thinking ahead.
Yes.
For our community.
And then there's one more scene. This is at the end of the movie. So she is fully transformed into the witch, but she has this very long moment where I think she's rejecting it, and that's visualized by the hair falling
the
off.
The wig.
Yeah. The wig being thrown into the lake.
I'm going to name the wig Peg. So Peg falls off, and Arya is once again herself with the appropriate amount of hair. Mm-hmm. And she seems relieved that she's fought it off. And I think the hair is just going to go back to wherever it is.
This is the come and see scene that reminded me of come and see. There's this shot of her face as she's like angrily rejecting the hair and stuff. Uh-huh. It is super intense.
Very good.
Yes.
Again, I love that. And I think, is that when she throws the
yeah.
She throws Peg into the water and I cheered audibly.
But after that, who or what is shot? Is she shot? Who shoots her? Mm-hmm. Does she shoot something?
Did she transform into that sheep?
Well,
that was a cow.
Was it?
Yeah.
It was like
the black animal.
Yeah. Yeah. Like a furry cow.
Highland.
No.
It's not a hardy coup.
But like
with the color.
Does she shoot the cow? That was the most confusing part is the gun.
I don't remember seeing a hand on the gun, so
there
I couldn't tell.
There was a hand on the gun.
There was?
There was?
Yes.
All right, but I couldn't tell who was holding it, I guess.
Me neither.
Yeah.
Like, and there was, ketchup flirts of blood, and...
Oh my god, yes. There were straight up streams of blood.
But I couldn't tell because at that point, she's covered in black paint and, covered in hair, and
but
then...
the hand was not covered in paint. So
okay, so
is she being shot? Mm-hmm. And that's what if I so, thought. By whom?
Because there's no one else in the movie.
Because Anne is dead.
Yeah.
The witch has been defeated.
Maybe the girl from the beginning is dead.
Yeah.
Maybe it's like an ironic twist ending, right? Like, so she is there on the moor rejecting Peg. The wig.
Thank you. Thank you for that.
And she just, successfully rejected it, although physically she looks all kinds of fucked up because she's
dirty, covered in paint,
yeah, all that stuff,
blood.
Yeah.
And then just some random townsfolk person or shepherd or whatever, it's just like, I don't know what the fuck that is, but like, I'm killing it now because she thinks somebody thinks that she's like this witch or whatever.
You know, you gotta write it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then shoots, I don't know.
So is it like doubling back to racism and like she's killed for being covered in black? And
I don't know.
Because that's the thing.
I don't.
There are only Pakistani women in this film.
Yeah.
It's just the main
witch.
Character, her aunt, and the girl in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Is the witch not?
No. The actor who plays the witch is white.
Hmm.
Huh.
And I was also just like, really?
Interesting.
Because of what you said, everybody.
Yeah.
It seemed to be a representative film.
But it's based on South Asian lore.
Right. That's true. You don't have to be any particular shade.
And the witch was always covered up in something, so it's not...
Right.
I could see...
That's the actor who played the witch.
Oh. Hmm. She looks like Amy Adams' cousin for the listening audience. So,
right.
Sorry, I didn't mean to say Amy Adams. I meant to say Nicole Kidman.
Oh, yeah, she does. Yeah. Closer resemblance to Nicole Kidman.
I can differentiate people from each other. I want that known on record.
Sometimes I can. Who are you?
Remember when Samuel Jackson was in The Matrix? Do you remember that video?
He's
being interviewed and somebody is just like, oh yeah, you remember like when you were in The Matrix?
They mistook him for Lawrence Fishburne.
And that's why sometimes he wears a shirt that says, I'm not Lawrence Fishburne.
Fuck.
But then sometimes he wears a shirt that says, I am Lawrence Fishburne.
Just keep him guessing.
That's even better.
But
yeah, okay. Because they're... wasn't anything leaning towards, like, this is colonialism's fault.
Right.
Until the very end. And, okay, I need to describe.
Yeah, because that's when the gun comes, and right. the gun is a rifle, not a handgun. And I think if you're going to go back to colonialism, it would have been a rifle.
Right, right. Okay. Yeah, God, I feel there's like we're so really reaching. There's just so much you could
interpret. Yeah, but are we? Are we reaching, or was it intentionally made that way?
Right.
To leave the reach available to you.
Right.
I don't know.
How many of those answers were asked and answered in the Q&A?
How many answers were asked? Not very many.
how many answers were given in the Q&A? Along those, like, do people have questions about stuff like that?
There weren't a lot of questions, I'm going to be honest.
No.
Well, you already know this is not a cash grab.
No, that's so, unanimous. Not a cash grab.
So everybody, go watch Black Lake, the feature film. Do you want to learn more about it? They're on Instagram at Black Lake, the feature film.
As our the full title.
Yeah. That's correct.
That's great.
Do you want to know more about the director? Well, you can find her on Instagram at Bad Wolf Films. You can learn more about the films she's making.
Somebody likes Doctor Who.
Oh, I mean, she's from the UK. She's making a new feature. So.
You buried the lead.
So you guys do not want to miss that. Let's see. It is called Maya.
Uh-huh.
M-A-Y-A.
Yep.
So, official trailer is dropping very soon.
Oh, fun.
So, go follow them on Instagram, at Bad Wolf Films. Follow us, too, while you're there at Cash Grab Cinema.
Why not? Doesn't cost a thing.
Exactly. Free.
Do it.
Just your time.
We're also on Twitter. At Cash Grab Cinema on Twitter. Do you want to donate to the podcast? You can keep hearing these smash hits one after the other when I feel like it. Well, we're on Venmo and Cash App. You can find us using the handle at Cash Grab Cinema. I'm Rachel, and as always, Josh. So he says nothing.
I'm here.
He waved at the microphone.
I did.
Close he feels to you people who listen. I want you to know.
That's how affected I am by Black Lake. You know what I mean?
I'm speechless. I'm sorry, by what?
Black Lake.
The feature film.
The feature film. Sorry, Black Lake, the feature film.
And Trey, thank you for coming back.
Thanks for having me. This has been so special.
It's been magical. Chef's kiss.
It was right on time.
Bye, everybody.